Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Eliza Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's BUNEKE.org.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Mary, your host for Be Unique Radio. We are on Be Unique Unscripted, and that's because I just don't have the time to script up a conversation. But I am here today, and we're going to discuss what if you can't afford a second opinion. Sherry Livingston is one of our guests, as is Joni Ventacinque. I knew I was going to say it weird, but Joni Livingston has spearheaded the Second Opinion, a San Francisco-based nonprofit providing free, comprehensive second opinions to adults diagnosed with new or recurring cancers. She's been doing this since 2014, I believe. And Joni is a breast cancer survivor, an active volunteer at the Second Opinion, and she's a patient advocate who's just returned from a powerful symposium. So without further ado, I think we should just say welcome, ladies. Glad to have you here.
Well, thank you for having us, Mary.
Yes, thank you.
You are very, very welcome. Sherry, would you like to lead us off and tell us a little bit about how this all started, how you came up with the idea for the Second Opinion?
Well, I didn't come up with the idea.
Okay.
But it's a great idea. And
tell us who did.
A doctor, he was a thoracic surgeon at Stanford. His name was William Lester Rogers, also known as Lefty. He founded the organization in 1969. And what he did is he took a group of physicians that were working on cancer to address an unmet need in the community, which was the lack of cancer specialists in the San Francisco area. So when we started out, physicians used to refer patients with cancer into the program to get a second opinion. So it was a physician-referred program because they needed to obtain an expert opinion because there wasn't a lot of treatments for cancer patients, and they wanted to make sure the patient was diagnosed properly and they were getting whatever treatments were available. So that's how it started. And then about in the 70s, when tumor boards and cancer centers start to evolve, we opened it up to patients so patients could refer themselves into the program.
Very cool. So you don't necessarily have to have.
And patients can refer, they can self-refer by phone. They don't need a physician, you know, to recommend them or anything. They can self-refer by phone or email and request an appointment. And then our medical director, who was supposed to be on tonight, but could not, Howard Kleckner, he's a medical oncologist. He reviews all the requests and he determines whether we can help the patient. We usually never turn anybody away, but some people don't need a full panel. We do this with a panel of doctors, and we can talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
Sometimes they just need a few questions answered, or they have a time. They have to have a question answered by a certain time, and we can't get him in quick enough. He will call them and call that a telephone assist.
Oh,
and
wow.
So he'll call them and talk to them over the phone.
I know he was supposed to be with us, and I want to just say, Dr. Kleckner, wherever you are, I hope you're listening, and we wish you well and a speedy recovery. I know he is not able to join us. I have a question for both of you, because this is something that intrigues me. When somebody works with a nonprofit, you volunteer, and you, prior to the Second Opinion, were a volunteer for Ronald McDonald House, and you worked with the Breast Cancer Connections, and you were with the Teen Pregnancy Coalition. And now Joni is working as a volunteer with the Second Opinion. What is it about the Second Opinion that drew you to this, to give your time, your talent, and your energy to this particular organization? Mm-hmm. Can you take it first, Joni?
So that's
sure.
Joni.
Sure. So as you mentioned, I'm a two-time cancer survivor, and I was diagnosed 5 years apart, and the second time I had a much more complicated sort of decision tree I had to make. If I did X, then I would have to do Y. If I did W, I'd have to jump over to Z. And trying to figure out what the best course of action for me was very confusing, because the doctors use different scales. They give you all these numbers for risk and benefit. And just, at the time in your life when you're so freaked out, about hearing the words you have cancer, it's really hard to focus. And it's hard to, I had my husband there by my side, and he's an electrical engineer and he understands numbers, but it was just as hard for him to focus. So a place like the Second Opinion gives people that opportunity to sit down in a room with a whole room full of doctors, different types, oncologists, radiation oncologists, surgeons, and take the time to really ask their questions and really understand what is being recommended to them. So I think from my experience of just what an out of control feeling it was to get diagnosed, to be able to have a resource like that was so important, I think so important to everybody, because I think once a patient understands why a treatment is being recommended to them, they're more apt to follow through with it, and they do better. They're more of a partner with their doctor, and they see the value in what they're doing. So I volunteered because I feel very passionate about all the patients out there that have come after me who are still, struggling with making treatment decisions.
So what is it that you do as a volunteer?
Oh, okay. So I sit with the patients during sort of a lunch hour time, and I tell them that I am there as a resource for them. So I did volunteer at a breast cancer organization in the Bay Area as a helpliner, and I would hear questions coming from the same women, the same questions over and over. So I help them connect them with resources, whether it be educational resources about their disease, or if they've gone on to the internet, which probably most of them do, and they, type in Google and they get like a slew of answers, and they have no way of knowing what is a trusted resource they're looking at and is something true or not. So I can help them sort of filter through what they're seeing on Dr. Google, and I can get full, if they're interested in a study and they can only see the abstract online, I get it for them. So basically no question, I tell them no question is too small or too big, because I love doing research. So sometimes it's clinical trials, sometimes it's on certain drugs they're being recommended. A lot of times it's just about, can you tell me what the best diet is for me? Or supplements. A lot of people are interested in getting healthier after a diagnosis, so they're always Googling, what can I eat, or is there special supplements I should take that's going to, strengthen my immune system. And so basically I do that. Sometimes I help connect them with social outlets in their areas, where they live, if they're looking for a support group, that kind of thing. I also do research for that kind of thing. Yeah. So
well, you mentioned You mentioned that you have a kind of a database of resources for cancer patients. And if I understood from our pre-show chat, Sherry can probably answer this. That is soon going to be put on your updated website, is it not?
Yes, it'll be under, you know, patient resources, and there'll be trusted sites that they can go to get information on their cancer diagnosis and their treatment options.
And I think that is the key, trusted sites, you know, because like Joni said, there's so much out there on Dr. Google, and it can almost paralyze you with, you know, one page tells you to stand on your left foot, the other page tells you to stand on your right foot, the other one says lift up both your feet, then what happens? You fall flat on your butt. So you have to know where good, solid, sound advice comes from.
Right.
And I think this is a perfect time to mention that your website is thesecondopinion.org. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it is being updated, and we're launching a new site probably middle of February. We're working on it now, so we'll have a lot more. It'll be more user-friendly and a lot more information for patients on it.
Excellent. Now, Sherry, you work mostly in the Bay Area of California, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So I know that you, or the Second Opinion, is planning to expand your services, because right now you're working more in the city and you're wanting to go more rural and hit more of the low-income communities, correct?
Correct. So what we're doing is we're trying to partner with cancer support organizations to expand right now, to expand our service so people can access it in their own community. We're located in San Francisco, and sometimes it's very stressful for patients to come to San Francisco. They leave really early in the morning, say from Sacramento, and get to our place at 9:30, and their appointment is until 11:30, because they don't know what the traffic's going to be like or the parking. And it's very stressful, and we don't want that. We don't want them to be stressed out when they come, and they really value our service, so they want to make sure they get there on time. So what we're trying to do is partner. Now, we've done a partnership in the East Bay with a cancer support organization, and we're doing that the fourth Friday of every month. So they do all the, you know, the publicity and stuff, and help us get patients that are in their community near their county hospital. And so that's been very successful. And so now we're going to try and do it in the South Bay of California, which is the Silicon Valley area, near their community hospital, partner with somebody there and do a panel once a month there as well, so people don't have to travel as far. And our ultimate goal in the next 3 years is to have one in the Central Valley, a site where people can, in the Sacramento region, where people can access a second opinion in that community. We do video conferencing. We've done it a few times, but we don't have the outreach in the communities to let people know that it's available. But we partnered with a cancer support organization in Humboldt County, and we did a couple of video conferences with patients, and it worked really well. But we know one of our challenges is getting up there and letting people know. And these are really medically underserved cancer patients, because they only have one hospital up there. It's very rural. It's very spread out. And so they don't have very many options. And they sometimes won't comply with treatment because it's too hard for them to get to the hospital. So they want to know if there's easier way, like with radiation. Sometimes you have to go every day, and there's some different options with radiation. So we're trying to expand that way. We're doing it slowly, but it's time. You know, we've been around for 50 years, and it's time for us to kind of spread out and you know, other states can do this. It's a really important program for people with cancer, and other states can do it. They just need to get a physician champion, and they just need to get donors, and it can happen in their state as well.
Now, when you say donors, you mean financial donors?
Correct.
From the programs, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, most of our funding comes from donations. We have a really solid donor base where donors give pretty regularly each year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I write grants, and we have a couple events each year to raise funds. But we have a very, you know, small budget. Our budget's $450,000 a year. We have 2.5 employees. You know, we're very efficient at what we do. So, and then volunteers like Joni, and all our doctors are volunteers. We do pay our medical director a stipend for his work. So,
well, good. He deserves that.
Yes.
I need to take a real quick little break here, but when I come back, I want to talk about the number of people that the Second Opinion has helped. So consult your numbers real quick. I'll be right back.
Okay. How are you doing, Joni?
Let me ask you a question. Do you prefer coffee or tea? This is a question we ask on our fun and informative millennial talk show called Coffee or Tea, No Phones Allowed. And why do I know? Because I'm Anna. I'm one of the co-hosts. It's a great time. It's a professionally edited weekly series that's free to watch on Be Unique's YouTube channel. That's B-U-N-E-K-E. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode and leave us a comment with your topic or guest recommendations. We love hearing from you.
And we're back. We're talking about people who cannot afford a second opinion when they've been diagnosed with cancer. And our guests tonight are Sherry Livingston and Joni Sinticinque. It just makes me want to say it that way. I can't help it.
You're doing well.
Joni 25.
Yeah, there you go.
We were talking earlier about how the Second Opinion was founded in 1969 by Dr. William Lester Rogers and a group of other pioneers in the Bay Area. Sherry, how many people have the Second Opinion consulted since 1969?
Over 10,000.
Wow.
In the 60s and 70s, they used to do it on a weekly basis, and we're starting to do that again, having four panels a week to increase the numbers we serve. But we have a panel on Friday, and we see three patients. And so we see about 109 to 120 patients in person.
Mm.
But they're patients. Their family members and friends come with them, and I include them because they need to know just as much as the patient, because they're usually the support system or the caretaker. And so they need to be comfortable, and they need to know what maybe the side effects will be. And the doctors do talk to the patients about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so about 300 patients altogether, and that's including telephone calls when we call a patient and just answer their few questions. Some patients come back multiple times, and that's when their diagnosis might change or their treatment plan might change. So they'll come back again and see if they're on the right track. And it's important to note that the cancer patients come to the Second Opinion at various stages of their cancer treatment. You know, some are newly diagnosed and just need a better understanding of the extent of their disease and the benefit of their treatment options, so we can do that. And then some don't want to do treatment at all. So that's where we can be of the most benefit. And then some are discouraged by the results of their treatment and need to know and confirm that they are getting the best possible care. And then some have finished treatment and they are scared that the cancer is going to return. So they come asking if they've done all they could to prevent a recurrence. And some have given been given or told that there are no more treatment options available to them. So we can give them compassion and sometimes hope. So they come at different stages of their cancer, and they can come multiple times. Once they're in our system, they can email us, they can call us, and we'll try and get the doctors that were on their panel to respond.
So they reach out to you sometimes just to say, is my doctor doing what he's supposed to, right?
Well, usually they don't see it that way.
Okay.
they'll call and say, they're giving me this new drug, and I want to know if that's the drug that I should be taking my diagnosis.
Okay.
And so the doctor will go back to the records, and hope if they're not too far back, you might need to get new information, new medical records. But the doctor will look at the file and confirm.
Go ahead, Joni.
I was just going to jump in here that a lot of times too, patients come because they're not 100% sure that they're getting unbiased information from their medical centers, you know, thinking mm-hmm. that, well, maybe there's something better outside of this medical center. And the benefit of the second opinion is that our volunteer doctors come from all over, right? So they don't, you know, and these aren't the doctors that are going to be treating you. So they have sort of no skin in the game as far as they can be totally open and honest and take their time and talk to them. And I think that gives some people, you know, a lot of comfort and hope.
Exactly.
Right,
I can see mm-hmm. that it would, because you're talking to another doctor, but he's not necessarily the doctor who's treating you. So,
right.
as you say, there's no skin in the game, and there's no bias.
Right.
You know,
if
I'm going to a doctor who I'm paying, there's a certain contractual understanding between us.
Mm-hmm.
But with the second opinion, these doctors are doing it completely from a generosity of their own heart, basically.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Now, how many doctors are on the panels typically? Do you have a rotating thing, or do all the doctors go to all the panels?
So we have about 70 volunteers. We don't use them all, because some of them are
mm-hmm.
specialists, and some of them are working, and so they may not be able to come in a year, but they may make it once a year or something.
Okay.
So what we do is we pull from those 70 doctors. Our program director, Lori Bode, pulls from there, depending on the type of cancer patients we're seeing. And the medical director will usually help with that. So there's usually on the panel, there's always a radiation oncologist, there's always a medical oncologist, a radiologist that reviews the images, a pathologist
mm-hmm.
that reviews the pathology slides, and sometimes a subspecialist, a urologist or a breast surgeon, and other doctors. That may want to join in as well. We have doctors visit us all the time and sit in on panels to see if they want to volunteer. But we always have those four, and they're different every time, and it just depends on the cancer, who we pull, if we need a specialist or not.
Okay, that makes absolute sense, because you know I only know what little bit I've been able to read from your website, and it, you know, it doesn't explain all of this, but this is really cool because it's kind of the way we work with my organization. We have more volunteers than we need on any given day, and sometimes they're available, sometimes they're not, and sometimes they're not the right fit for the particular project we're working on. So
right.
it makes a lot more
right.
sense to me now.
And what's unique about it is we, you know, you can get a second opinion, but sometimes you at a cost. But
exactly.
Sometimes they just read the reports and Joni attests to this, that she just thinks it's so fantastic that we actually look at the pathology fly, and we actually look at the image. It's like having a second pair of eyes look at everything that's been done to, you know, on your cancer diagnosis. So
you're dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and I think one other thing Terry hasn't mentioned is that, you know, we also, or the second opinion also will supply a medical interpreter. So if we get somebody whose first language is in English, which in the Bay Area, there's a lot, you know, we'll actually hire a medical interpreter for, we've had quite a few Chinese and Spanish and Russian, and so, I mean, to me, that's an incredible added benefit that the second opinion does for patients. You know,
yes,
so
I
they can hear
only,
that information in their own language.
Exactly. I can only imagine how terrifying it would be to be diagnosed with cancer and not be able to understand what your doctor is telling you.
Right, right. Hard enough in English.
Exactly. I cannot. Yes, it any illness, it doesn't even matter. I had a non-cancerous issue one time, and it had a very long name. And I asked the doctor, I said, would you tell me what that's called again? He goes, I'm just going to call it Alice. Because it was easier to say, well, your Alice is acting up again. So, something else I know that we touched on earlier before the show, and it's not a pleasant thing to talk about, but I know that you have been doing research, Joni, into the American Cancer Society's report on the cancer death rate. Can you just tell us a little bit, have the numbers changed over the years?
Yeah, they have. They've changed for the better. So this was a cancer statistics 2020. It's put out by the American Cancer Society, so people could probably get it online. And basically, death rates from cancer have dropped. You know, they were rising until about 1991, and then they started falling through 2017. So it was basically 29% decrease in cancer deaths. And
I don't mind if they do.
The process is mainly driven by the decline in death rates of four of the leading cancers: lung, colorectal, breast, and prostate. So there's been, you know, much more treatment for those diseases, and so people are living longer.
Excellent.
But, you know, which is great. So there's been declines in lung cancer, mainly because people have finally stopped smoking, and men and women, which is great. But, you know, but the rate of cancers are still going up. The rates of diagnosis are still going up. So, you know, what is that all about? Which is what we need to look at, you know. Is it something in our environment, our diets, obesity, something in, you know, the American way we're living? So, and, you know, so it's great, you know, that there's definitely better treatments and people are living longer. But it's still, you know, cancer is still the second leading cause of death after heart disease in this country. So, yeah, so there's good news, but also, you know, we need to do better.
Mm-hmm. You, Sherry, you had mentioned earlier that you get a lot of your funding from donors, but also from some events. Do you have any events coming up in the next couple of months, maybe that are listeners would like to know about?
So, yes, we do. We have a speaker event. We usually get an author or a powerful speaker to come for breakfast, and that's our major fundraiser. We have not confirmed our speaker yet, so I can't say who it's going to be this year. Last year we had Charles Graber, who was wonderful. He wrote Immunotherapy, The Race to Cure Cancer. Did I say it right, Joni?
Yeah.
And he was a fabulous speaker. And so we try and get somebody that will appeal to, you know, the physicians in our community as well as people with cancer. Or we had Anne Lamott once, and, you know, you're just, you know, it was our first one, and we wanted to get the whole community in there and learn about our service. So that's going to happen on May 1st, and we usually have it at the Jewish – we will be having it at the Jewish Community Center in San Francisco, and it's a breakfast. It's from 8 to 10. And that's our – we raise about a quarter of our budget from that breakfast. And
nice.
Then, of course, yeah. So – and then we do a golf event, and that's going to be – this year it's going to be on September 17th, and it's at the Richmond Country Club. So any golfers out there, and they can always go to our website. We always post our events, and they can find out about them. And then we do the annual campaign. We just did our annual donor campaign at the end of the year, and we're trying to think of other events that we can have and raise funds as well. So to help with our expansion and going into new communities.
Well, I'm going to mention your website again because I don't want people to go, well, what was that? It's thesecondopinion.org. Because I know if you hear it'll just pick in your head.
Yes, and don't do .com because if you do secondopinion.com, you get something completely different.
So what are the eligibility requirements for a patient to contact you?
Well, they have to have a cancer diagnosis, and they have to be being treated in California.
So if I live in Florida, but I come out to California for treatment, I could call you?
Yes.
Okay.
They have to have a doctor in California and being treated here. So our doctors are licensed and insured. We carry malpractice insurance just in case. But they're California licensed doctors, so we don't do anybody. We don't provide our service outside of California.
And you're in the heart of San Francisco, or where are you located in San Francisco?
We are in the heart. I think Capitol Hill is the heart. So we're up above the financial district. We're kind of like in the middle where all the churches are, which makes it nice because if people come early, they can wander around and look in the churches. So it's easy. It's easy to get to. It's just the traffic in San Francisco.
Traffic
is threatening to some that aren't used to driving in a big city.
Yeah. So if somebody comes to a second opinion for a panel, what can they expect? What's going to happen?
So what happens is we have, for each panel, we have a panel chair. So the panel chair is the facilitator of the panel. So he keeps people on track, the doctors. So the panel chair meets with each of the patients, which we have three on each panel day, and he will meet with them to make sure they have all the information, talk to them about their questions, get new questions if they have new questions, and just kind of go over their case with them. And he does that with all the patients. And then the doctors are arriving that are on the panel during that time. Once he has talked to all three patients, he goes in and he sits with the doctors and they confer. Because this is the first time the doctors have all received the medical cases about a week prior to the panel date. So they've reviewed them, but they haven't sat down and talked to each other yet. So the panel chair will go in and will summarize each of the patients to the doctors and list their questions and their concerns. And they'll talk about each of the patients. And then Joni and I, during the time they're talking, we meet with the patients. And I talk about the organization and how we're funded. And Joni offers her services as a research advocate. And we sit with them, and sometimes it becomes a support group. Sometimes we talk about other things, not even cancer, sometimes vacations and stuff. It just depends on the patients and their family members and where they're at when they come in. And so we have lunch with them, and then the panel chair comes and gets the first patient and takes them in, and that's how the process starts. And sometimes from 3:30, the last patient's out. Sometimes it runs longer, depending on the complexity of the case. But
well, it sounds like you take as much time as needed, but you're not dragging this out either. You're giving each person individual attention, and I think sometimes that's as therapeutic as anything else. You know, it's. You're letting them know that as a human being, you matter to us.
Right.
Yep.
I mean, I think it's nice because, you know, when you're at your oncologist or your surgeon or your radiation oncologist, you may have a 15-minute visit, but you have three pages of questions. And you know, as a patient, you know they're busy, and you try to sift through those and ask your most important ones, you know. But when you come to the second opinion, you can actually sit down and ask all those questions.
Wow.
Which is great. Yeah. So
yeah, I remember reading once that most doctors are so busy and overscheduled that if you have more than three questions, you need to ask one, because that's the one that they're going to answer, and the other two if they have time.
Right, right.
And
it's
sad
that
the doctors
too.
Yeah, that means they're working really, really hard.
Yeah, and I don't think most doctors, you know, want to work that way. I think they would rather take the time, but pressure being as it is in healthcare.
And we also see patients from community hospitals, which are overburdened.
Yes.
And sometimes they don't even get to see their medical oncologist. You know, they come in for their chemotherapy and they do a blood test, and the doctor sees the blood test and okays it, and then they go in for their infusion. Sometimes they don't even see them. For multiple times they come in.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, so they don't get their questions answered.
That's a shame. Because I would imagine with a cancer diagnosis, you probably have more questions than, the questions just keep coming. How am I going to survive? What if I don't survive? How am I going to go through treatment? What if I can't afford treatment?
Right.
And, you know, the questions just don't seem to stop. Do the primary doctors get upset knowing that their patients are going outside of their network maybe to look for a second opinion?
So people always think that, but I think doctors are thankful of our service, because we have really good cancer centers and doctors here in the Bay Area. And so they want their patient to be comfortable, and we don't get a lot of that here, but patients often think that, and sometimes they don't tell the doctor that
they're looking
getting
for another
a second opinion.
So
usually they're not, they're happy. Because their patients are more comfortable with the treatment and going forward.
I would think it would be helpful.
The second opinion offer.
It's harder
summary.
When you've got three people talking, but that's okay. Go ahead, Joni.
Yes. Okay. Oh, yeah. The second opinion does offer a patient summary that they send it to the patient after the panel, and they'll also send it to the patient's doctor if the patient wants it to go to them. So there is that option.
I would think that would be helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think in general, I think most doctors now welcome second opinions. you know, because they know that if their patient understands why they're doing something, they're going to do better. And so I know people think that, oh, their doctor is going to be upset, but I'd say if that doctor is going to be upset, maybe that's not the doctor for you.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah. You know, if you're somebody with more opinions.
I forgot to mention also during the panel review with the patient, they record it. So the patient gets a recording of that.
That
they can listen to it at a later date.
Oh, that is an actual, that's wonderful, because I can't tell you when I was taking care of my mom how many times I'd go to the doctor's office and think, I need to be paying attention, but I want to take notes, or should I record this? Because when you go home, and especially as someone who's not necessarily the patient, you want to be able to know exactly what that doctor said. And you can't always know if you're trying to remember it all.
Right.
I think that's really important that they're recording it. That's amazing.
You know, plus I think when you're in the room with your loved one, sometimes you hear the same information and you take it in differently, you know. So it's great to go back and listen to it again.
Exactly, exactly. It's just, it's vital to be able to hear it with a less emotional attitude. Because, you know, when you're in a doctor's office, and it doesn't matter if it's your primary care physician or an oncologist, or if you're in front of the panel with the second opinion, most people, rightly so, think, oh my gosh, these people are so important. They are the people that are going to help me get over this. And you don't want to take up too much time asking the same question over and over again. So if it can be recorded, then you can remember it. You don't have to worry about remembering it. I don't think I've ever heard of anybody doing that. Kudos to the second opinion for that.
It's very stressful. And people, you know, when you're under stress, it's hard for you to remember. And
it is.
And
it's hard to remember. Sometimes it's hard for me to remember if I'm going left or right down the street, but that's a whole nother story. Speaking of story, I have to share something with our listeners. It's just a little information about Be Unique. And when we come back, I'm going to have more questions for you ladies.
Okay.
I'm inspired to give back by the many individuals who are making a difference and taking steps to make the world better. Many people are tackling problems by themselves and thinking they are all alone in their efforts to make a change. I want them to know they are not going unnoticed. The world is watching. I'm part of a team helping to project their voices on a global scale. Small charities and solo entrepreneurs are doing amazing things but don't have the budgets to market themselves. Like many people, I once struggled in a variety of jobs I didn't care for, so I decided to find a new way to give back, to pay it forward, and to be the change. While some people my age are considering retirement, I've joined other professionals to create and manage a nonprofit organization called Peace Corps. The words that create our name tell only a small part of our giving story. We are philanthropists, educators, activists. We are compassionate, evolving, charitable, optimistic, responsible, and enthusiastic. We created Peace Corps so we can use our natural talents to help others. We work with nonprofits, individuals, and for-profit organizations that have a philanthropic outlook. Peace Corps uses several tools to give a voice to those that otherwise might not be known outside their small local circles. Be Unique magazine is released monthly and printed on demand. This digital interactive publication doubled in size within 5 months. During that same time, it attracted almost 60 volunteers from 12 countries and across the USA. These volunteers are professionals. They're performers and writers, editors, researchers, videographers, photographers, crew members, and so much more. Coffee or tea, no phones allowed, This fun show is hosted by millennials and provides insight into what they're thinking, but it's by no means intended to appeal only to that generation, as evidenced by their topics and their guests. Because our volunteers know that we are giving 100% of our beings to this organization, they are meeting us on our terms. Nobody earns anything. Yet we all work as if we are earning six-figure incomes. That is the epitome of giving. Curating the stories and creating a high-quality literary-style publication that not only highlights the good work of others, but projects positivity and inspiration gives me purpose. By giving myself to this organization, others want to give to Peace Corps. We have created a global giving circle.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Mary, and I'm here with Sherry Livingston and Joni Venticinque from The Second Opinion, a San Francisco-based nonprofit that provides, and this is a word we haven't used yet, free, comprehensive second opinions to adults diagnosed with cancer. And they've been doing this since 1969. I think it's mind-boggling that you're doing all of this absolutely free. I'm sitting here going, trying to think of questions to ask you because you've been so generous with your time already tonight. One question that did come to me, though, when someone contacts the Second Opinion, either online or with a phone call, about how long would it take for them to hear back from you guys with maybe an appointment or an answer to a question?
They hear back fairly quickly. Within 1 to 3 days, they'll hear back whether or not we're able to provide a panel review for them.
Okay.
And if not, if we can help them in some other way. Because there are some cancers we don't see. So if they're really, it's a really rare cancer and we don't have a specialist, what we'll do is we'll find specialists in the area and say these would be the people or these are the doctors you probably would want to consult with. And then what we have to do is we collect all the medical records. So that's what our program staff does. They hound the medical records departments to get the medical records, and they get the pathology slides. And some people have multiple facilities they're being seen at, so they have to keep track of all this. It's amazing what they do. They have to get the imaging. So sometimes they have to contact three departments to get just the records, the imaging, and the pathology. And then once that you know comes, then we're able to disperse it. We're able to put it together and disperse it to the doctors. But we usually call them within 1 to 3 days with a panel date. We give them some options, but they usually aren't seen for 3 weeks because we have to get the information to the doctors to review. And
you have to put the puzzle pieces together.
We do. And I think one of the things, when I did a similar service survey when I first started at the Second Opinion to see who else provided second opinions, and mostly hospitals and medical facilities, and asked them, tried to see what they did differently. They do not collect the medical records for the patient. The patient has to collect the medical records for themselves. And that can be really hard.
Because a lot of times, I know in the past, a lot of practitioners aren't forthcoming with, you know, I don't want to give you this. And it's not exactly in that term, but I kind of dumb things down. But I think it's amazing that you have people that are doing that, because I know what a daunting task it is to gather all those different documents from and pathology and things of this nature. I mean, that's a lot of information to put together.
Yeah. And the doctors have to review it and make sure it's all there because they can see if things are missing. And then they set the program people to task to get the things that are missing. So sometimes it takes it's usually not more than 3 weeks. During the holidays, though, when we don't have as many panels, and so sometimes it's a longer wait, but very rarely. And again, if people need a question answered quickly or need to make a decision quickly, we will often provide a telephone assist.
So you're just doing as much work as you can in whatever fashion you've got to do to get the job done.
Right. Right.
Well, I'm sitting over here.
How hard it is.
Yeah. That's amazing. Speaking of the doctors, I know you said you have about 75 that are on your roster. Could you use more?
Always. There are certain types that we can use. I think one of them is radiologists and radiation oncologists, but we can always use more doctors and specialists. So, yes.
So doctors, if you're listening,
breast cancer,
and you've been thinking of a place to volunteer that would do some real good in this world, contact the people at thesecondopinion.org. What about
doctors do not have to come in person. Pardon me?
Oh, no, go continue. I want to hear about this. They don't have to come in person?
No, so some doctors will do written reviews. So they'll review the imaging and do a written review or the pathology, because a lot of our pathologists are in labs or, they're working. And so what they do is they take the time out to review the pathology slides again and the written report. So they review all that, and then they send it back in a written form if they concur or if they see any issue. So so they work from their facility to review some pathologies. Some come in person. Pathologists are sometimes they like to come in person because they never get to see the patient. They only get to see a piece of them.
Or they get to see a picture of them. they get to see inside of the person.
Yes. But they're the most important people when you're getting diagnosed with cancer. Joni can attest to that.
I mean, I think that's really cool, though, that there are some that want to put a face to the slide or the blood sample or whatever. But what I was going to ask you, what about other volunteers? Do you have need for other volunteers besides doctors? Or are you pretty much maxed out?
So we do need, some administrative help. I could always use that because I, have to write letters and thank donors. And if I had somebody working with me, that would make things wonderful. And administrative staff, we always can make use of.
Think a nonprofit can have enough administrative staff ever.
Right. I agree with you.
Wait, let me rephrase that. I don't think a nonprofit can have enough skilled and passionate administrative staff. You kind of have to have both of those because, just any old volunteer is not necessarily going to help you. Sometimes they slow things down. But it's kind of interesting to see who shows up with their hand raised to say, I can help. And I can't imagine turning anybody away. Because if all they can do is fetch coffee, I actually had somebody one time offer to clean my bathrooms for me. I didn't take her up on it.
Wow.
I wish I had. I wish I had.
Wow.
And if I had an office, if I had an actual.
Send her my way.
Maybe she'll come from the East Coast over there. I need to do one little closeout thing here, and then I want to make sure that people know exactly how to reach you. So hold on one moment while we do this last little commercial.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's BUNEKE.org.
Okay, welcome back one more time. This is our last time. I am here with Sherry Livingston and Joni Vindicinque with thesecondopinion.org. Sherry, would you tell everybody, doctors, volunteers, patients who've been diagnosed with cancer, how they can find you and what they can do, should do, or what you would like for them to do?
So first of all, I'd like to thank you for having
very
us
welcome
on here, because, you know, a lot of people don't hear about our services and they wish they had. And most patients hear of us through word of mouth or sometimes their physician, but most of the time word of mouth, support groups, cancer organizations. And so this is wonderful to have this opportunity. And cancer patients or family members can access our service by going online to thesecondopinion.org, all one word, or by calling us at 415-775-9956. And doctors, you know, they have to be licensed in California because that's the patient population we serve. But again, they don't have to come in person. They, you know, some of our radiologists look at the imaging on the cloud and they can do a written report, et cetera. So.
All right. Joni, have you got anything
yeah.
that you'd like to add?
I think just watch out for Dr. Google and definitely go to trusted sites, and we'll be putting those up on the new Second Opinion website coming up.
Well, Joni, what's your favorite site that you use?
I would say my favorite site is cancer.net. So that's pretty easy to remember. Cancer.net, it's the patient site for the American Society of Clinical Oncology, and you can put in there your type of cancer, and what will come up is diagnosis, types of treatment, screening, stages, and the most important thing that they offer is a list of questions to ask your care team, and they have it divided into questions for the oncologist, questions for your radiation oncologist, your surgeon, etc. So cancer.net.
I think we just saved the best information for last. That's valuable. That is such a valuable piece of information. I'm going to make sure that is in the description so that people know where to go. And I think after talking with you, Sherry, I'm going to follow up later, and we'll actually put an article in the magazine probably about summertime. Early summer.
Oh, wonderful. That would be
so
wonderful.
That people can read. And now we're doing a new thing where we, all of our stories that are written are also audio stories. So I will connect one of our writers with, I think I only have your PR, Brigitte.
I
only have her, Brigitte. I have her email. I'll reach out to her and we'll get this going.
Oh, great.
I'm excited about sharing this information because it's really just so extremely valuable. And,
yeah, and then hopefully somebody's listening that maybe wants to start one of these organizations in their state or their community.
Yes,
we can help.
Love that. And maybe when Dr. Kleppner feels... I think I just mispronounced his name, but when Dr. K comes back, when he feels better and is a little more, a little less out of the, under the weather, we can come back and have him on and talk about this. And maybe we can drum up some other doctors in other states. I know.
Right. Right.
I haven't heard of anything like this on the East Coast. So it would be important to have, I think. I'm going to say everybody should go visit thesecondopinion.org if you have cancer or know someone who has cancer and you live in the San Francisco area. But if you don't live in the San Francisco area and you are a doctor, go visit thesecondopinion.org and find out what it's about and think about donating your time to something wherever you live. Ladies, it's been a delight and a pleasure, and I really appreciate your time.
Okay,
thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. You're welcome. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners and that our website and magazine receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's BUNEKE.org.